Hello and welcome to the Russian Empire History Podcast, the history of all the peoples of the Russian Empire. I'm your host, JP Bristow. This is Season 1, The Forest, The Steppe, and the Birth of the Russian Empire, and Episode 47, The Sons of Monomakh, Part 2. Thank you to new boyar Jeffrey, and as always, thank you to the new subscribers on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, even if I don't see your names. Just a reminder to keep sending your questions for the Episode 50 Q&A. You can use the Spotify app if you listen there, Twitter, Facebook, or email to hello@therussianempirehistorypodcast.com. Vyacheslav Vladimirovich arrived in Kiev 4 days after Yaropolk had died. According to the chronicle, the people in the metropolitan greeted him and placed him on the throne of his father, Vladimir Monomakh. So far, so good. The lateral succession is working as it was supposed to, and the people of Kiev seem to be accepting the Monomashichi as their ruling dynasty. The chronicler makes no mention of any objection from Izyaslav Mstislavovich, so once again we have to conclude that the agreement to place Mstislav's sons in Pereyaslavl did not necessarily put them in line for the throne in Kiev. But we've already seen that Vyacheslav was maybe a bit lacking in that lust for power that drove medieval princes to always want something more. When Yaropolk moved him to Pereyaslavl, he had refused and gone home to Turov. While his brothers and nephews might support him taking Kiev, would he have what it takes to impose himself on his cousins if they did not want to acknowledge his sovereignty? If you guessed no, you'd be right. Within 2 weeks of Vyacheslav arriving in Kiev, Sevolod Olgovich of Chernihiv was attacking the suburbs of the capital. He was leading a small force, presumably what he had been able to put together at short notice, mostly Olgovich men with some support from the Davidovichi. It was an opportunistic move, counting on Vyacheslav not having the spine to resist, and the bet paid off. Vyacheslav did not try to defend himself and did not appeal to his brothers for assistance. As usual, the chronicler says that he declined to fight to avoid shedding Christian blood. This seems to have been the go-to phrase whenever the chronicler did not want to discuss the real reasons why someone did not fight, whether it was from cowardice or just because it might make them look bad and interfere with the royal propaganda. In this case, going by past behaviour, we have to think that maybe Vyacheslav was glad to get out of Kiev and head back home to Turov. He sent a message to Sevolod with the Metropolitan. Quote, "Brother, I have come here after my brothers, Mstislav and Yaropolk, according to the testament of our fathers. If you want this throne and wish to abandon your patrimony, then, brother, I am younger than you, so let it be so. Withdraw to Vyshgorod and wait. I will return to my former domain, and Kiev will be yours." End quote. Sevolod waited a few days before entering Kiev, and Vyacheslav left for Turov. Sevolod, of course, could not take the throne on the traditional basis that his father had held it. He had to rely on the acclamation of the people. Historian Martin Dimnik believes that the chronicler is being purposefully ambiguous here. If the testament of our fathers had meant the testaments of Vladimir Monomakh and Yaroslav the Wise, it would have said so. Instead, the fathers can be interpreted to mean Vladimir Monomakh and Oleg of Chernihiv, and therefore the reference is to the agreement that they appear to have concluded regarding the succession, the one that allowed Monomach and then Mstislav to rule ahead of the more genealogically senior candidates. Vyacheslav therefore asserts that he has the right to rule on the basis of the agreements between their fathers, in which Oleg gave up his rights of inheritance, but he agrees to acknowledge Vsevolod's seniority by age. If you're hoping to avoid Rus breaking apart, this is all a bit of a disaster. Vyacheslav has broken the line of Vladimir Monomach and his son's ruling. He's rendered any agreement between the families on the succession defunct, and he's thrown the potential succession wide open. Whereas before, Vyacheslav was to be succeeded by Yuri and Andrei, who still retained rights as their father had sat on the throne, and the Mstislavichi had their own claims since their father had sat on the throne. Now, the Olgovichi suddenly reinserted themselves into the equation. The succession was no longer clear. The claimants would say, as the occasion arose, that it was for God to decide. And God's decision was something that they would determine by force. The Monomachichi were hostile to Vsevolod from the beginning. They rejected his demands that they pledge allegiance and began to prepare for war. Vsevolod responded by ordering Izyaslav, Rostislav, and Andrei to vacate their cities. Vsevolod went after the core domains, the ones that Yaroslav had left to his sons. He already held Kiev and Chernihiv. Now he wanted Periyaslavl, Smolensk, Vladimir in Volhynia, and Turov. If he succeeded, he would flip the balance of power, and the Monomachichi would be left with just Suzdalia and Novgorod. The Mstislavichi would be left with nothing. Vsevolod had two main advantages: lack of unity among his enemies and the great distances between their domains. He tried different approaches. He sent his cousin Izyaslav Davidovich with some Bolovtsi and his cousins from Galicia to attack Izyaslav Mstislavich in Vladimir in Volhynia. At the same time, he ordered Andrei Vladimirovich to swap places with Vsevolod's brother Sviatoslav in Kursk. The campaign against Vladimir failed, and Andrei said no. The campaign against Izyaslav failed, and Andrei said no. Periyaslavl was the city of his father and grandfather, and if Vsevolod wanted it, he would have to kill Andrei. Vsevolod ordered Sviatoslav to attack, but Andrei won the battle. Vsevolod was forced to conclude a peace, but shortly afterwards, Periyaslavl caught fire at night. The chronicle claims that it was not Vsevolod's men who started the fire, and Vsevolod did order them not to attack. Regardless, the city was devastated, and Andrei was forced to surrender. Rather than press home his advantage, Vsevolod decided to accept Andrei declaring loyalty, and then left him Periyaslavl after all. Meanwhile, Iga and Vladimirko of Galicia had attacked Vyacheslav, and he, as always, gave in rather than risk losing Turov. This caused a rift with Izyaslav, who invaded Vyacheslav's land himself, the first time that the Monomachichi and Mstislavichi had fought each other since they sorted out who would get Periyaslavl. What had provoked Izyaslav was that Vyacheslav, as the eldest, had ruled the Monomachichi out of contesting Kiev by pledging allegiance to Vsevolod. However, the Poles invaded Vladimir in Volhynia in support of Vsevolod, and Izyaslav was also forced to come to terms. The primary inducement was keeping his domains, But Izyaslav would also later claim that Vsevolod had agreed to nominate him as his successor. That left Yuri, who initiated a campaign to remove Vsevolod from Kiev as soon as he heard of the takeover. He marched to Smolensk to join his nephew, Rostislav, and sent word for his son, also Rostislav, sorry if this is getting confusing again, to join them with the army of Novgorod. The people of Novgorod refused to fight. Rostislav Yurievich was forced to flee, and Yuri was forced to abandon his plans to march on Kiev, although he did seize a couple of Novgorodian towns as punishment on his way home. At some point during the next couple of years, Rostislav of Smolensk also pledged allegiance to Vsevolod. The people of Novgorod aligned with the Olgovichi again and received Vsevolod's brother Sviatoslav as ruler. And then Vsevolod moved to conclude new treaties with the Polovtsi. He took Andrei with him, as Pereyaslavl on the edge of the steppe was the most vulnerable domain. This left only Yuri opposed to Vsevolod's rule in Kiev. The fickle people of Novgorod were done with Sviatoslav by the beginning of 1140 and asked Vsevolod to send him his son instead. Initially, an agreement was reached for Sviatoslav to stay until the son arrived, but he heard that there was a plot to kill him and fled with his family. Archbishop of Novgorod Nifon persuaded Vsevolod that he should still go to Novgorod with his son, but on the way he received a message that we've already mentioned a couple of episodes ago, that Novgorod would not have his brother, his son, or any other member of his family. Instead, they wanted Sviatopolk of Pskov, a Mstislavich. Not unreasonably, Vsevolod took offence at all of this. He prohibited the Mstislavichi from going to Novgorod and told the city to find a ruler if it could. Then he ordered a boycott of the city like Yaropolk had done previously, including the supply of wheat. After 9 months, the hungry Novgorodians were forced to turn to Yuri, and that meant welcoming back Rostislav for a second time. The chronicle implies that Suzdal had also stopped grain supplies for its own reasons, but now the deliveries were restored. Vsevolod retaliated by attacking Yuri's town, Gorodets Astyrsky, on the border of Pereyaslavl. That was not the end of the story. If you recall, Vsevolod was married to Maria, daughter of Mstislav, and she decided to support her family's case. Vsevolod listened to her and gave Sviatopolk permission to take Novgorod. When the people of Novgorod heard, they arrested Rostislav and held him captive until Sviatopolk arrived. Rostislav returned to Suzdal. This meant three Mstislavichi, Izyaslav, Rostislav, and Sviatopolk, now held important domains, with only Vladimir still without. For now, they held them at the pleasure of Vsevolod, but in terms of resources, the three of them were essentially the equal of Vsevolod, Vyacheslav, and Andrei. Andrei of Pereyaslavl died on 22nd of January 1142, probably the lowest achieving of all the Monomashichi. He was buried in the Church of St. Michael in Pereyaslavl rather than with the rest of the family in Kiev. And that left two, Vyacheslav of Turov and Yuri of Suzdalia. Like the other members of the family, Andrei and Yuri had agreed to take care of each other's sons, in this case, Andrei's son, Vladimir. The death set off a new round of conflict. Vsevolod declared Turov a part of the domain of Kiev and ordered Vyacheslav to move to Pereyaslavl. This was following the rules of lateral succession, but ignored the agreement that Pereyaslavl belonged to the Mstislavichi. He began raiding along the Suzdalian border, seizing livestock, stores, and towns. The outcome of all of this was that Vsevolod appeared to have maneuvered very successfully, giving the Mstislavichi Novgorod kept them happy, giving Pereyaslavl to Vyacheslav according to the lateral succession rules, left Yuri without any grounds to object, putting his own son in Turov, strengthened his position in the heartland. But the efforts to placate rival families left his own brothers unhappy with the minor domains that they had been given, and they made their complaints known. Vsevolod attempted to buy them off with towns in the Turov domain. The brothers, Igor and Svyatoslav, and their cousins, Vladimir and Izyaslavovich Davidovich, rejected the offer and demanded Chernihiv lands. Vsevolod refused, and they decided to attack Pereyaslavl instead. So the Svyatoslavichi raided across Pereyaslavl. Vsevolod sent troops to assist Vyacheslav. Izyaslav Mstislavovich also came from Vladimir and Volynia. Rostislav Mstislavovich was on his way to Kiev when he heard. He joined in by raiding Svyatoslavichi lands around Gomi. When Izyaslav heard what his brother was doing, he also attacked Chernihiv lands on the Desna. Although the chronicle says that Igor and Svyatoslav wanted to take Pereyaslavl, they did not attack the city, and so the raiding was probably more of an effort to pressure Vsevolod into giving them what they wanted. They may have counted on the Mstislavichi having their own interests in Pereyaslavl as well, but their opponents stayed united. So the next move was to attack Pereyaslavl itself, and this finally made it clear to Vsevolod that they were not going to back down. So he granted them additional towns and domains in Chernihiv lands. While Vsevolod might have thought that he finally got things sorted, it was not to be. Vyacheslav wanted out of Pereyaslavl again. When Izyaslav had come to help his defense, he had proposed that they swap domains, and now he asked Vsevolod to approve. So Izyaslav moved to Pereyaslavl, Vyacheslav moved back to Turov, and Vsevolod's son Svyatoslav moved from Turov to Vladimir in Volynia. This new reshuffle enraged Vsevolod's brothers once again, who accused him of favouring his in-laws over his own blood. Back when Yaropolk had tried to give Pereyaslavl to the Mstislavichi, the Monomashichi brothers had joined forces to oppose. Now, even if Yuri was against it, he stood alone, since Vyacheslav had proposed the appointment, and therefore he was unable to do anything about it. While Yaropolk's brothers raged and demanded he join them in opposition to the Monomachs, Vsevolod stood firm, and so they were forced to live with it. At the start of 1143, Svyatopolk Mstislavich of Novgorod married a Moravian woman, who, once again, the chroniclers do not provide any details on. According to the tale, Izyaslav spent the whole winter with his brother in Novgorod celebrating, which shows that he must have felt secure in Pereyaslavl. The following year, Izyaslav married his daughter, unnamed of course, to Rogvolod Borisovich of Polotsk. Vsevolod and Maria attended the wedding in Pereyaslavl, continuing expressions of goodwill towards the Mstislavichi. This wedding is notable as it shows Izyaslav attempting to secure friendship with the Polotsk family, who his father had deported to Byzantium. In 1145, Vsevolod summoned the rulers of Rus to Kiev for a conference. Most of the big names came, his brothers, Igor and Sviatoslav, the Davidovichy cousins, and the Mstislavichy. But Vyacheslav and Yuri of Suzdal were very conspicuously not invited. Vsevolod made the following announcement, quote, "Brothers, you know that by the law of Rus, each king bequeaths his patrimonial domain to his son. Vladimir Monomakh appointed his son, Mstislav, to Kiev, and the latter designated his brother, Yaropolk, as his successor. And now I proclaim that after God takes me, I bequeath Kiev to my brother, Igor." According to the chronicle, Izyaslav Mstislavich had to think deeply about this, as it meant that he would have to kiss the cross and pledge loyalty to Igor. But in the end, he and his brothers did so. This is the chronicle getting into a bit of foreshadowing. Although Vsevolod is claiming to be following the precedent of Vladimir Monomakh and Mstislav, an attempt to pass the throne to his brother is inevitably going to provoke the Monomashichy. With the conference complete, Vsevolod launches a campaign to support his Polish allies and appoints Igor as the commander to give him a chance to earn some prestige. Izyaslav claims that he's sick and stays at home. On 1st of August the following year, 1146, Vsevolod died and was buried in the church of the saints Boris and Gleb. On his deathbed, he had sent messengers to Izyaslav and his cousins demanding that they confirm their allegiance to Igor, securing the throne for the Olgovichy. Both branches of the ruling clan with a surviving claim, the Olgovichy and the Monomashichy, were rejecting rotating rulership and asserting their right to keep the throne within their family. Although Vsevolod had successfully reinserted the Olgovichy in the line of succession by seizing the throne of Kiev for himself, he had been forced to rely on the support of the Monomashichy and Mstislavichy cousins to rule. While he had succeeded in undermining and isolating Yuri in Suzdal, he had established the Mstislavichy in Pereyaslavl, Novgorod, and Smolensk. Igor's position was far from secure. In fact, the oaths that Vsevolod had gone to such an effort to secure endured for barely 2 weeks, and according to the chronicle, the people of Kiev met Igor with hostility. He tried to appease them by appointing officials popular with the crowd, but the situation continued to deteriorate, and rioters began looting official buildings. Igor asked Izyaslav in Pereyaslavl for support. Izyaslav declined. According to the chronicles, the people of Kiev then invited Izyaslav to take the throne. The various regional chronicles paint this as due to a combination of personal dislike for Igor, resistance to Kiev becoming a part of the Olgovichy patrimony, and loyalty to the Monomashichy. That is, it was not so much that the people of Kiev objected to becoming the patrimony of a ruling family, just not this ruling family. This is consistent with what we've already been told about them welcoming Mstislav, Yaropolk, and Vyacheslav. Vsevolod had been accepted because he won the military contest, but that did not mean they would accept his heirs. The only small surprise is that they invited Izyaslav of the Mstislavichi to take over, rather than Vyacheslav or Yuri. Izyaslav would have been well aware that his uncles had the prior claim by genealogical superiority, but he was ready to remove Igor from Kiev. First, he would need to justify breaking his oath, which he did very easily. He simply stated that Vsevolod had coerced him into making the oath, and therefore he did not consider himself bound by it. He also declared that he had his own claim to Kiev on the traditional basis that it was the throne of his father and grandfather. Igor's father, on the other hand, had not ruled in Kiev. Before setting out, he also prayed publicly and declared that it was up to God to give either him or Igor the victory. So if he succeeded in taking the throne, that would prove that it was God's will. He marched on Kiev, defeated Igor, and was welcomed by the people of the city. On 13th of August 1146, he was installed on the throne in the Cathedral of St. Sophia. Igor's brother, Svyatoslav, had managed to escape to Chernihiv, but there was no immediate threat since the Davidovichi cousins had decided to align themselves with Izyaslav. Igor and Sevolod's Druzhiniki, who had been settled in Kievan lands, were rounded up, their possessions confiscated. Igor was taken to Pereyaslavl and thrown into a pit at the monastery of St. Ioan. With Igor removed from the picture, a conflict played out between Vladimir and Izyaslav Davidovich, who were ruling in Chernihiv and took Izyaslav's side, and Igor's brother Svyatoslav Olgovich and nephew Svyatoslav Sivolodovich. The Davidovichi demanded that Svyatoslav Olgovich pledge allegiance to them and said they would remove him from his city, Novgorod-Seversky, if he did not. Svyatoslav refused, sent demands to Izyaslav for the release of Igor, and began recruiting allies from other Rus cities and the Polovtsi. Most importantly, he turned to Yuri of Suzdalia, who was only too glad to find a southern ally who could help him challenge Izyaslav. Meanwhile, Izyaslav was entrenching himself in Kiev. He kicked Svyatoslav Sevolodovich out of Vladimir in Volhynia and returned it to the Mstislavichi. Svyatoslav was given 5 minor towns in the southern Kiev lands and appears to have accepted his fate. Unexpectedly, Vyacheslav of Turov objected to the move and seized Vladimir along with some other towns that Vsevolod had previously taken from him and incorporated into the Kievan lands. In justification, he asserted the seniority of the Monomashichi. That is, he put out a reminder that he had the senior claim to Kiev. Izyaslav sent his brother Rostislav of Smolensk to put Vyacheslav back in his place. He also took steps to repay the Davidovichi by supporting them in their plans, which included killing Svyatoslav Olgovich and taking his domains. Izyaslav sent his son, Mstislav, with Rus troops and the Turkic Birinde allies to assist the Davidovichi in an attack on Novgorod-Seversky that saw the outlying villages slaughtered and the land pillaged. Yuri set out to assist Svyatoslav, but Izyaslav had prepared for this by ordering Rostislav to attack Suzdalia if Yuri moved. When Yuri heard that his lands were under attack, he returned to defend his home, but he did send his son Ivanko to aid Svyatoslav in Novgorod-Seversky. Ivanko succeeded in relieving the city, and Svyatoslav gave him Kursk as a reward. It's a pretty unusual move for an Olgovich to give a Monomashichi one of their cities. This could be a sign that Sviatoslav was so desperate to secure Yuri's support that he would do anything. Alternatively, if we recall that the Monomachs had previously ruled Kursk, Yuri may have asserted a claim and demanded that it be handed over as the price for his support. The Davidovichi again demanded that Sviatoslav give up his claims and swear allegiance to them, and once again he refused. The chronicle gets a bit confusing at this point. The Davidovichi sees Sviatoslav's town of Putivo. Izyaslav comes up to join them and distributes Sviatoslav's property. Sviatoslav Sivolodovich turns up, although he's supposed to be dealing with Vyacheslav. Mstislav Izyaslavich disappears from the campaign and reappears as the ruler of Kursk, which seems to have become a Mstislavichi town before Ivanko even managed to visit. Meanwhile, Igor had got sick due to conditions in the pit. Fearing that he would die, he asked for permission to become a monk, which was granted on 5th of January 1147. Izyaslav sent him to the monastery of St. Fyodor, which was controlled by the Mstislavichi. Becoming a monk stripped Igor of his secular status, and therefore there was now no reason to seek his release. Igor's loss of status meant that Sviatoslav now became the senior prince of the Olgovichi, which made his defeat more important. So Izyaslav and the Davidovichi marched on Novgorod-Siversky once again. Sviatoslav retreated to Karachov in the Vyatichi lands. Izyaslav pursued, and Sviatoslav fled into the forest. Izyaslav looted Karachov, told the Davidovichi he had discharged his obligations to them, leaving them in possession of Chernihiv, Putivl, and Novgorod-Siversky, and he returned to Kiev. The Davidovichi still wished to kill Sviatoslav and continued to pursue him as he fled further east. Sviatoslav reached Koltiesk, the northernmost town in the Chernihiv lands, where he was met by 1,000 men Yuri had sent from Bielorussia. Ivanko, still with Sviatoslav, fell ill and died, and Sviatoslav sent his body to Yuri. Despite this loss, Yuri reiterated his support for Sviatoslav and promised to send another son. The Davidovichi called off their pursuit once they realized that Sviatoslav had been reinforced. Clear lines had therefore been drawn. The Monomachichi and the Mstislavichi were on opposite sides. The two strongest rulers, Yuri and Izyaslav, were enemies. In the spring of 1147, Yuri and Sviatoslav launched their campaign. But rather than attacking Izyaslav and the Davidovichi, they went after the northern Mstislavichi, Suzdalia's neighbours, Sviatopolk of Novgorod, had previously not been involved in the disputes at all, and Rostislav of Smolensk, who had supported the Davidovichi. Yuri summoned Sviatoslav to plan the campaign. Приди ко мне, брате, в Москов. Come to me, brother, in Moscow, says the chronicle. The first known mention of a little village you might have heard of somewhere. Sviatoslav arrived on 4th of April, 1147. The campaign opened with Yuri seizing Torzhok and the Mstar River district from Novgorod, while Sviatoslav marched on the Smolensk lands, pillaging as he went in revenge for Rostislav pillaging the Vyatichi lands. Gleb Yurievich joined him with men from Murom and Polovtsi auxiliaries, and together they defeated the Davidovichi forces and began recovering Sviatoslav's towns. The next phase was to attack Putivl and Kursk. but the Davidovichi sent messengers offering peace in exchange for giving up the Vyatichi lands and Novgorod-Siversky. The chronicler notes that there was no real reconciliation. The Davidovichi were, in fact, only looking to buy time. And as soon as the peace was concluded, they were trying to persuade Izyaslav to support them in a new campaign to expel Sviatoslav once again, as well as a campaign against Yuri to force him into a settlement. Izyaslav was inclined to agree, but the people of Kiev were not willing to fight a monomach, and they were still hostile to the rulers of Chernihiv. Instead, Izyaslav sent one of his men to Chernihiv to get a better idea of what was going on. His man found out that the Davidovichi and Sviatoslav Sevalodovich had reached an agreement with Sviatoslav Olgovich and were in contact with Yuri. Their aim was to capture or kill Izyaslav. Izyaslav sent word to the Davidovichi demanding that they reaffirm their oath to him. They refused and demanded that he release Igor. Izyaslav claimed that they had violated their oath, and he declared war. So, Izyaslav gathered his forces to march on Chernihiv. He sent word back to Kiev from his camp outside Pereyaslavl, asking his brother to raise the city's militia. The people of Kiev called their Vyechi to discuss the call and agreed to fight for Izyaslav. But then someone pointed out that Igor was still in the monastery of St. Fyodor and could be a threat. What if someone released him and tried to restore him to the throne while Izyaslav and the men of Kiev were away? Therefore, they should kill him before they leave. To give him his due, Vladimir tried to stop them. Izyaslav had not ordered them to kill Igor. Igor was a monk who had given up the world. But the mob was not for listening. They set off for the monastery. Vladimir went too, begging for Igor's life. He caught Igor up on his horse and rode to his mother's house for safety. The mob pursued them, smashed the gates to the house, seized Igor and killed him. The next day, the Metropolitan took his body and buried it in the monastery of St. Simeon that his father, Sviatoslav, had founded. The murder of Igor made it clear that the dominant faction in Kiev supported the Monomashichi and was completely opposed to the Olgovichi. They were also prepared to act against the wishes of the ruling Mstislavichi. In late September 1147, Yuri's son Gleb joined Sviatoslav Olgovich, the Davidovichi, and Sviatoslav Sivalodovich to recover the towns of Posimir that Izyaslav had taken for the Mstislavichi. The first target was Izyaslav's son Mstislav in Kursk. If you recall the previous campaign, Kursk had been promised to Gleb's brother Ivanko as the reward for his participation, and now it was to go to Gleb for the same reason. In the event, the people of Kursk refused to fight and welcomes back a prince of the Monomashichi. However, the outlying towns belonging to Kursk took the side of the Mstislavichi and put up a strong resistance. Meanwhile, for the Mstislavichi, Izyaslav pillaged lands belonging to the Davidovichi in southwest Chernihiv territory and razed the towns to the ground. Rostislav marched south from Smolensk, raiding Chernihiv lands as he went, including Gormy, formerly Igor's capital, and Lubech, part of the Davidovich patrimony. Gleb next moved against Izyaslav's son Vladimir, who had been placed in Gorodetsa-Styrsky. He recovered the city that Sevalod had taken from Yuri, driving out Vladimir and increasing the hostility between the Monomashichi and the Mstislavichi. The following year, Izyaslav marched on Chernihiv. Rus siege warfare was still underdeveloped, so he was not keen on attacking the strongly fortified city itself, and cautious Davidovichi were in no hurry to come out and give battle before their allies arrived. Even when their allies did arrive, the battle did not take place, as spring floods prevented the armies from meeting. Izyaslav fell back on more pillaging, causing enormous damage across the Davidovichi domains. Yuri also declined to help them fight Izyaslav. It turned out that he had been happy to send Gleb with forces to recover Kursk and Gorodetsa-Styrsky, which he considered his own, but he was less interested in helping anyone else achieve their objectives. This left the Davidovichi in a tough spot. Izyaslav had seized their resources and ravaged their lands. Yuri had apparently reneged on his promise to support them. So they were forced to settle with Izyaslav. He forced them to swear not to hold him responsible for Iga's death and to abandon their claims to Kiev. While this was happening, Yuri had sent another son, Rostislav, with forces to support the Olgovichi. However, perhaps jealous of Gleb receiving Kursk, he changed his mind and marched to Kiev, where he asked Izyaslav to give him a domain. He declared that Izyaslav was the senior of Monomakh's grandsons, and therefore Rostislav wished to ride at his side. Izyaslav replied that Yuri was the senior in the house of Monomakh, but he was unable to live in agreement with his nephews. For his part, Izyaslav regarded the Yurovichi as his brothers, and if Yuri would not give Rostislav a domain, then he would be glad to. The Olgovichi saw that they would not be receiving their reinforcements, and that the Davidovichi had agreed peace with Izyaslav, and they had no option but to follow suit. Izyaslav completed the season by driving Gleb out of Gorodetsa-Styrsky, and he returned to Yuri in Suzdal. While his sons had been busy in the south, Yuri himself had been raiding the lands of Novgorod, where Izyaslav's brother Svyatopolk ruled. In 1147, the Novgorod Chronicle says that Svyatopolk had assembled the entire forces of Novgorod to march against Yuri. In 1148, Archbishop Nifont of Novgorod tried to negotiate a peace with Suzdal, but failed. With the south pacified, Izyaslav wanted to end hostilities in Novgorod as well. He tried a reshuffle, moving Svyatopolk to Vladimir in Volhynia and sending his son Yaroslav to Novgorod, but Yuri continued his raids. Izyaslav decided that it was time to test the loyalty of his new allies and summoned the Davidovichi and Olgovichi to a meeting at Gorodetsa-Styrsky, where he asked them to march with him against Yuri and end the raiding into Novgorod lands. The Davidovichi came and confirmed their loyalty. Svyatoslav Olgovich stayed away. Izyaslav took this as a repudiation of his oath, but the Davidovichi said that they would persuade him, and they agreed that they would all set out when the rivers froze over. While they waited for the rivers to freeze, steps were taken to bring Svyatoslav Olgovich into the fold. And on 9th January 1149, Svyatoslav's daughter, not named of course, arrived in Smolensk to marry Rostislav's eldest son, Roman. The rivers finally froze, and Izyaslav and the other Mstislavichi set off to punish Yuri for attacking Novgorod. The Davidovichi and Olgovichi had agreed to join them at the Volga, but instead they stopped at the edge of the Biatici lands to watch how Izyaslav would get on in Suzdalia. Even though the result of the previous 2 years' campaigning looked as if it had created a united Rus behind Izyaslav against an isolated Yuri, it seemed like loyalty to the Mstislavichi remained weak, and no one wanted to provoke Yuri into a serious campaign to the south. Izyaslav marched around, did some of the usual pillaging, but failed to find an army to fight and withdrew before Easter. Back in Kiev, there were more problems. Rostislav Yurevich was accused of plotting to depose Izyaslav while he was away. Rostislav naturally denied the accusations, but Izyaslav expelled him from Kiev anyway, forcing him to return to his father in Suzdal, which must have been rather embarrassing for him. It turned out that Yuri was a lot more forgiving of his son for going over to the other side in order to grab himself a domain than he was of Izyaslav for punishing Rostislav over unproven allegations. This was the provocation that would make Yuri finally gather his troops for a direct attack on Izyaslav. Izyaslav had received assurances from Vladimir Davidovich that the Davidovichi would fight Yuri for him, but Sviatoslav Olgovich was questionable once again. Izyaslav sent a messenger to check that their agreement still held, and Sviatoslav locked him up. Then he sent his own messenger to Yuri to ask him what his plans were. Was he going to attack Izyaslav or to attack Olgovichi lands? Yuri confirmed that he was only interested in punishing Izyaslav for failing to give Rostislav a worthy domain, presumably Pereyaslavl, and expelling him from Kiev. Feeling safe from Yuri, Sviatoslav sent a second messenger to Izyaslav, saying he was willing to help if Izyaslav would give him back Igor's lands. Izyaslav was outraged by this attempt to bargain. He told Sviatoslav that he had sworn to be loyal and to not hold Izyaslav responsible for Igor's death. If he was going to break his promises, then he would have war. Sviatoslav's attempt to get a better deal had ended with him forced into an alliance with Yuri. Yuri and Sviatoslav's forces met up on 7th of August 1149. They sent messengers to the Davidovichi, inviting them to join their campaign. The Davidovichi refused because Yuri had failed to come to their aid during their former alliance, which had resulted in Izyaslav ravaging their lands. So Yuri and Sviatoslav continued towards Pereyaslavl, where Sviatoslav Sivalodovich and a force of Polovtsi joined them. Izyaslav and Rostislav, with the army of Kiev and the Ros River Polovtsi, marched out to meet them at the Alta River. Yuri started by offering Izyaslav peace. He demanded that Izyaslav hand Pereyaslavl over to Rostislav Yurevich in recompense for attacking his domains and denying his seniority. Yuri would then allow Izyaslav to remain in Kiev. Izyaslav rejected the deal and chose battle. It was not a wise choice. The Kievans, who had already demonstrated limited willingness to fight the Monomashichi, began deserting. As the fighting grew fiercer, the Pereyaslavl militia withdrew and sent a messenger to Yuri, inviting him to take the city. Abandoned, Izyaslav fled. It took him 4 days to reach Kiev. He demanded the people let him enter and prepare to defend Kiev. They told him and Rostislav to seek safety elsewhere, although they did promise that they were still with the Mstislavichi against Yuri. Izyaslav fled to Volynia and Rostislav to his home in Smolensk, leaving the road to the city open for their uncle. Join me next episode as Yuri arrives in Kyiv for the first time. Thank you for listening, and until next time, goodbye.